Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT, NXT Heatwave for August 22nd, 2023. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, Twitter X. It's going to trip me up every time, whatever it's called, Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for tonight for Heatwave on pwtorch.com if you'd like to see or read what I thought about tonight's show. Here with me to do that, Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey, everybody. It's Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at _Lee253. And my report for tonight's heat wave is up on the site and fully complete. So you can get a look at that if you somehow missed some of it or just want to get some more detailed or written thoughts on the show.
So speaking of more thoughts on tonight's show, let's give some more thoughts on tonight's show, shall we? We had a main event being Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee for the NXT championship. We saw Carmelo Hayes retain after a pretty grueling match between Wes Lee and Carmelo Hayes. This match has been kind of building for quite a while. Past handful of weeks. However, they told a story that went back quite a while, which is kind of what I was trying to say. Part of that story being the last time that these two were in a championship match, it was for the North American title in which Wes Lee won. And that was something that had been brought up in promo segments leading up to this match here tonight. I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a phenomenal match. I mean, as you would expect, Wes Lee, Carmelo Hayes, on paper anyway, sounds like they're going to have just a completely bombastic, crazy match. And then that's what we saw, including just absolutely insane spot off the table, which was conveniently saved earlier in the night by Bron Breakker. And we'll get there. But the announce table, Wes Lee on the announce table, Carmelo Hayes on the second, standing on the apron, moonsault off the second rope into a DDT to Wes Lee through the announce table.
It wasn't a moonsault. That was Nathan Fraser.
Oh,
it was like more of the Kofi Kingston trust fall. But then he caught him on the DDT as he fell backwards. Yeah.
All right, cool. I knew it was like into a DDT. In my mind, I was remembering a moonsault, but as you said that, you're right. You're right. I was making it more spectacular than it needed to be because, hell, it was spectacular in and of itself. Didn't need any more pizzazz on it. Crazy bump. Absolutely crazy bump. They had a couple more, including one where Wes Lee's head kind of bounced off the barricade, which looked kind of gnarly. I think he's fine. I mean, they continued the match. They checked them, and he looked okay. But man, I don't know. I replayed that a couple times. It didn't look like it felt too good. I thought
it led to the finish of the match, but it wasn't that much longer.
What's up?
It led to the finish of the match, but it wasn't like it was that much longer.
No. That's true. It was building up to that final sequence for sure. It's just something that kind of stood out in my head that I at least brought up anyway. Like I said, Carmelo Hayes retaining here. Wes Lee, for a wrestler who was not supposed to be a singles wrestler, after his tag team partner had to depart the company, at some point last year, it's been a little over a year now, year and a half, something like that. He wasn't supposed to be a singles wrestler. Now here he is competing for the highest prize in NXT. For somebody that wasn't supposed to be there, I think he did a damn good job, even in defeat. Bruce, what'd you think of main event?
Yeah, it was a good match. And the early part of the match was that these two know each other so well that they're just encountering each other, landing moves at the same time as each other, and that when they would get the advantage on each other, they made sure that they delivered a lot of offense when they did, because they knew it wouldn't be that much longer before it was back pretty much a 50-50 match. A lot of good spots, as you were saying. The first thing I wrote about this was this is another chapter basically in the book of How to Sell by Wes Lee, and just another fantastic match in that regard. But the match itself, as you said, was was great. It wasn't, you know, as hard hitting as a Dragunov match, as a Dragunov Triple H match, but it was still physical and grueling in its own way. And that spot at the end where Lee missed the toe pin, hit his head on the barricade because Hayes also moved. Hayes' eyes, I liked how he sold that. Like, oh, okay, this is gonna work. And then when he rolled into the ring, and Hayes and Lee was there, he could have just took the count out. Hayes shook his head at him almost as if to say, "Come on, man, don't, you know, just take it. Don't take the extra punishment by coming back into the ring." And you know, Wesley's defiant, so he came back into the ring and immediately ate the nothing but net. And it was just, you know, he went the quote unquote honorable way instead of taking the count out loss, which for his character is what has been doing basically since he became a singles wrestler, whether it was all the times he got laid out by Dijak, facing Hayes, facing Williams, facing Dragunov. It really didn't matter at any time. Whoever it was, he never let that, he never let his eventual defeat keep him from fighting on. So they kept that going. Now, for me, well, I guess I'll hold off on these comments until we talk about the rest of the men's segments tonight, but a good match, like the ending, like you said, that springboard into the DDT was a great spot. Wesley had some great spots. He was able to, you know, he hit his finisher, and then Hayes was able to roll outside, but he was able to at least land that. And you don't really get to see everybody hit their finishers on the champion and matches that they lose, unless, you know, they're getting ready for some kind of build. So going to be interesting to see what happens at Wesley here. I do think some of the things that happened with the other men's wrestlers tonight will tie into what happens with them next. But like I said, I'll save those until we discuss the rest of those segments.
Just throwing this out there, I don't know if you can raise the volume of your mic or something a little bit, but you're a little quiet.
How's this sound?
Oh, that's much better. That's much better.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome. All right. I thought this was a fantastic match. And I'm also interested in something that happened a little bit earlier in the night. We had a backstage segment right before this match took place where Trick Williams, I thought I mispronounced it, but I don't think I did. Trick Williams approached Carmelo Hayes backstage in the locker room, basically acknowledged the fact that he is indeed on a singles run, that he's not going to be with alongside Trick anymore, or Carmelo anymore. Melo also basically said that, yeah, that's true, and I'm kind of glad because, you know, after your interference in my last match with Ilya, it has like an asterisk on it. That win's got an asterisk on it. I don't want anybody questioning my win here tonight. So, yeah, it's better off. I'm going out alone. It kind of sowed some seeds maybe for like a Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes feud or something, which is something we've talked about here on the show before. I thought that was kind of cool. I liked the way they did it. It was kind of subtle, if you know, especially if you didn't necessarily see it coming, and maybe more of a casual fan. I think it was kind of subtle, but at the same time, it was definitely noticeable. And I'm interested to see how this kind of plays out. I'm thinking maybe with Trick Williams. We haven't talked about Trick Williams' match tonight against Ilya Dragunov, but He did wind up losing against Dragunov. We'll talk about that later on. But with this loss here, I'm wondering if all of a sudden, you know, like that's going to eat at him a little bit, or there's going to be some banter between him and Melo a little bit that's going to chip away a little bit more at these seeds that got planted tonight and lead into a feud between these two. I could keep going, but I'll talk more about this when we get to the Ilya Dragunov and Trick Williams match. I'll throw it to you, Bruce, and then we'll throw to a couple emails.
Yeah, so this segment had me questioning if they would be that quick in having Trick cause Hayes to lose tonight, but I think from the looks of it, and again, it could just be that he's acting it off, but it seemed like he understood what Melo was saying, that it's not that I blame you, it's that people think that match wasn't legitimate or I didn't win legitimately. And so if it's just basically one-on-one with no one out there, then no one can take anything away from me. You know, he didn't place any of the blame on Williams, and it sounded like Williams did buy that. So if that's the case, that's good. But again, they could be just having him play it off for now, I guess is the best way to put it. The thing with Trick and Melo, so if they did have Melo lose because of Williams' interference, it at least would have given those two something to do next. Right now, I'm not sure what you do with Carmelo Hayes specifically. I wrote in my report that, you know, hey, you could do the Fatal 4-Way or, you know, the multi-person match or the Contenders Tournament, but they're already doing one of each of those. So it doesn't really make sense in that regard. And having him off TV might not actually be the worst idea, especially if he's just going to be around, especially if he's just going to be on the show kind of listlessly because he's a champion and, you know, oh, he's a champion, so he has to be on the show. You know, just have him off, have some vignettes, remind people who he is, why he's important, and then you build towards something that maybe Tiffany Stratton tonight, he appears at No Mercy, and you have someone from Raw, or you have someone at NXT step up, so maybe someone who won later, earlier in the night at No Mercy. Just something. You don't always have to have him on TV. Now, with Trick, I guess you could just start, you know, he, like you said, he essentially confirmed that he is on a singles run, and even though it didn't start out the way he wanted it to start, he told Carmelo Hayes not to worry because he's got to put in the work. So I guess it's a more straightforward approach with Trick Williams. You could just have him face off against Chipo Lore on the card and then work his way up. And who knows, maybe he faces off against Carmelo Hayes come WrestleMania time and those two face off. And we should also note, going back to the main event match, Vic Joseph made a big point to say at the start of the match that this is the first time, and the qualifiers are here, but this is the first time that two black men have faced off for the NXT Championship, the Men's NXT Championship, on a main event of a PLE or PLE Light or maybe even an NXT TV show. And then you add in the ref, who's also black. So you have a trio there, a historic trio for this match. And it was a great match. And again, I'm just more concerned about what Hayes does from here. And with Williams, I see a more straightforward path.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to sneeze. It's a terrible time to stop talking. all right. I think I'm good. I think I fight it off. All right, let's go over to an email. We've got two emails here tonight. We don't have anybody in the caller queue. We've got a couple of people listening. You can call in 515-605-9345. We usually go live about half an hour after NXT goes off the air. Push 1, let me know that you want to be part of the show, and we'll bring you on. Feel free to do that tonight if you'd like. Otherwise, you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Just like Kevin Catani did. He says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a solid show, but it feels like they tried to squeeze a little bit too much into the final hour. No, I love the mixed tag. I thought that Lyra really held her own against Rhea, and the main event definitely delivered. That said, what's next for Melo? Are we working towards a Trick Melo match? Does Melo keep the belt that long? And on the topic of Lyra, did tonight's performance earn her brownie points moving forward? Thanks as always. Listen to go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So we talked a little bit about we talked about Trick and Melo just now. So there you go, Kevin. But talking a little bit more about Rhea and let's just kind of get into the match between Rhea Ripley and Dirty Dom, whatever you want to call him, Dominic Mysterio, against Lara Valkyria and Dragon Lee, mixed tag match. This was which saw Rhea and Dom on the winning side of the match here. I thought this was a fun match. It wasn't anything like. Judgment Day has felt bigger on NXT before. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. This match wasn't like in a really, you know, main event type level spot. I believe it was like, I it was either the mid-show main event, which I guess would kind of be like, you know, top of the hour, you know, kind of a good spot, or it was like 9:20 Eastern time, something like that, when it started. I remember thinking to myself, it was an odd time for it to start. But I was also a little bit behind at that point too, maybe 5 minutes or so, regardless of my viewing habits. I still thought that it was kind of a weird spot to put this on the show. This, I think, served a purpose of getting two big stars like Rhea and Dom on the show, as they keep wanting to do week after week after week, especially with Dom as North American champion. It's continuing both feuds between Rhea Ripley and Lyra Valkyria, as well as the one between Dragon Lee and Dirty Dom for the North American title. We could even potentially maybe see Valkyria show up on the main roster and challenge Rhea for the world heavyweight championship, women's world heavyweight championship. That's something that's in the cards too. We've seen it happen, you know, with other titles, other competitors, I think mostly male, although there was the whole Rhea Ripley and Charlotte thing back when Rhea was still in NXT, but that was over the NXT title. It's kind of different, whatever. The point being is I thought this, while it delivered, it wasn't like over the top. It wasn't anything that like, I think, stole the show. But it certainly served a purpose, like I said, in that stuff. But it also elevated Lyra Valkyria, kind of gave her the rub with, you know, against Rhea, and also her performance tonight was fantastic. Same thing with you know, with Dragon Lee, and I hate saying that Dragon Lee gets a bit of a rub from Dom, but he in this case kind of does, and it is what it is. But in this case, Dominic is the bigger star. He's got more eyeballs on him and all of that, you know, being on the main roster and one of like the most popular acts in popular acts in wrestling right now. So gets more eyeballs on Dragon Lee. I think this is a net positive, but it wasn't the most important thing on the show. And I'm hoping that this isn't how Judgment Day continues to feel. It was the first time that I felt like this with Judgment Day on the card. I think it was kind of done on purpose, and I'm hoping that they continue to feel more important going forward. I take that back. This is the second time I felt this way. The first time being, I think, was last week when they had a pre-recorded segment, but I gave them a pass on that because they had been there every week leading up to that, and it was the go-home show. But in a match anyway, in live action, I was a little bit underwhelmed.
So the top of the hour was the Tiffany Stratton women's segment, and then after that, I had some commercials and whatnot, was with this match. And so, yeah, this match was a perfectly competent mixed tag team match. Had a good story again. You know, Ripley was just kind of dominating Valkyrie and trying to, you know, beat the respect into her. She basically told her at one point, my stream froze during the match early on, so I kind of missed it, but when it came back, I think she said that she either lost respect or something for Valkyria early on in the match. And then, you know, because that whole thing was built on Ripley trying to get Valkyria to, I guess, earn Ripley's respect. And to me, clearly the person that needed the most work is Dominic Mysterio. The other three were just fine, but you can see some spots where Mysterio's a bit hesitant, a bit slow at parts, waiting for certain things to happen instead of making them happen himself. So that'll come with more experience and time. And again, NXT is the place to do it. So for what they have with Judgment Day right now, that is, like you said, it's not what you would think Judgment Day should be doing, but at least for Dom, it should be better because he's in the environment where things like that needs to be addressed. Dragon Lee looks great. Valkyria, I wrote that. Kind of to answer the email to Tanning. I'm pretty sure that what's going to happen at at No Mercy is Dragon Lee faces Dominic Mysterio, and Dragon Lee is going to become the North American champion. And then Lyra Valkyria is going to face Rhea Ripley one more time, and she's going to lose one more time as Ripley defends and retains her Women's World Heavyweight Championship. And I think that's going to signal the end of Judgment Day on NXT, at least for the time being. There doesn't seem to be anything else that they have even on the periphery for Judgment Day in NXT, even sort of signaling or subtly hinting at this might be happening. It's really just been focused on these four people and nothing more. Whereas when Judgment Day kind of first made their appearances, you had two, three, four different things going on with other wrestlers that you could see different angles happening with. So for me, I think this is all leading to that, and then you get back to either focusing in on who's there or whatever the next act is that's going to come in and make their mark in NXT. The match, like I said, it was good story. So Dominic taking the pin is what leads me to believe that Dragon Lee is going to get the victory. I don't know if it's not at the end, but Dragon Lee put his foot on the chest of Mysterio to, you know, end victory, and then he looked down and kind of said something to him, and then Mysterio suddenly shoved his foot off and then rolled outside the ring. I'm not sure if that was, you know, in character or if that was a little bit of a shoot right there, but that was something I noticed. And, you know, to contending the ML, Valkyria did a really good job in this match. She spent the most part of the match taking offense from Rhea Ripley, leading to a Dragon Lee hot tag, basically. So, you know, for her to get that much time in there with Ripley, again, shows how much trust Ripley has in Valkyria. And it probably signals to Valkyria that she's going to have either a continued push in NXT, or she's going to, like you say, matriculate her way to Raw or SmackDown. Yeah, the mopeds are really loud here, sorry. So,
No worries. We didn't hear anything. All of us, you were talking and then you were gone. So,
oh, good. Yep. No, there was a moped going by, so I wanted to make sure none of that noise made it through. So, yeah, I think I answered all parts of Katani's email. I could be wrong, but yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Sounds good to me. All right. Speaking of emails, I don't know why I keep going back to the speaking of thing tonight. I don't know. For some reason, I've got a lot of energy tonight, and that sucks because it's late, and early comes early. We've got an email.
2 hours of sleep last week, and then playing Baldur's Gate right after. Over to now with so much energy. Yeah. What a week.
Yep. Well, I caught up on all the sleep I didn't get. Actually, hold on. I need to check. I'm bringing up Steam right now. All right, it's actually not as bad as I thought. I thought I'd have more playtime in Baldur's Gate. It's only 68 hours.
Didn't that game just come out like a week and a half ago?
Yeah, and I thought it was going to probably be worse than that.
Okay.
I'm single, folks. I'm single. You know, that doesn't help, but whatever. It's a fun game. It also probably doesn't help that I'm, you know, doing a wrestling podcast either, but hey, whatever, it's fine. It's fine. I like me. Hi team, it's
good.
JB. Yeah, exactly. Good. Hi team, it's JB from Detroit. Now we've got, actually before I continue JB's email, I got so far into it before I stopped here. JB wrote us, and JB, I'm not knocking it, man. I keep sending them in, totally fine. But JB wrote us a bit of a novel of an email. So there are six questions here, one of them being about Trick and Mello, which I think we've already talked about. That was his last question. So I'm not going to bring that one up. So we've got five questions here from JB, which may just bring us to the end of the show. I don't know. We'll see. Because we talk about a lot here. There's also other segments and things that I don't think are quite in this email. I've kind of skimmed it over. But here we go. So, hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. At the end of the fifth round of, and he's talking about the NXT Heritage Cup match, Lash Legend grabs on Frazier's legs as he crawls into the ring to pin Dar in the final seconds of the round. The first problem is that Dar actually kicks out at two of Frazier's pin attempt, rendering the interference rather trivial as it wasn't a true Saved by the Bell scenario. Okay, I guess that wasn't a question, more of a comment. But I honestly didn't notice that. So good eye.
Well, I would say this, in that, sure, it kind of ruined the Saved by the Bell spot, but it doesn't necessarily mean that Dar would have kicked out had Lee been able, or not Lee, Fraser had been able to pin him immediately instead of Lash Legend holding on to his leg for a good 10 seconds. So I know the spot was kind of ruined because Dar kicked out right before the bell rang, and the ref was about to hit three right before the bell rang. So I understand the part of, you know, but again, if Legend hadn't been there and grabbed onto the leg for 10 seconds, who's to say he wouldn't have gotten the clean pin before the bell, before it even got close to the bell ringing? So, yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. Okay, so actually the first three points he makes here are about the Heritage Cup match anyway, so that's fine. That works. So secondly, Booker T says she was trying to help Frazier. I know that he's supposed to be a heel commentator, but that made absolutely no sense. It really hurts the team's almost non-existent credibility. It might be an unpopular opinion, but Book is worse than Vic, in my opinion. The rumor is that Booker's contract with NXT is almost up, and I wouldn't be upset if he was replaced. Thirdly, I have no problem with Heritage Style Cup rules matches, but I do have a problem with the Heritage Cup itself. NXT has too many trinkets and titles being fought over, so as it is, so another one in the Heritage Cup feels unnecessary. So let me go back here to the Booker T stuff first. I think it's okay. I was okay with him making a comment like that. And quite honestly, I don't necessarily remember the exact comment that he made. But, I mean, even if it was verbatim, she was trying to help Frazier. I'm okay with it because, I mean, he's commentating what is going on to the audience. And, I mean, if you have somebody that is just kind of tuning in that might not be a normal fan, they sometimes need a little bit of hand-holding, and it sounds weird to us. And I'm sure I've even criticized commentary for doing stuff like this before. But I know sometimes we all got to think about it in that perspective, too, because, like, we all watch it. We all watch wrestling. We've watched wrestling probably, I mean, I know me my entire life for the most part. Bruce, I'm sure, about the same. And I'm sure a lot of you guys, too. So sometimes they're going to spell things out for you on commentary that seems a little weird, but it's probably for the people that don't know or are new to the product, or something like that. So I'm kind of okay with it. As far as Booker T on commentary, like, yeah, we've talked about it a million times on the show. We agree with you, man. I'm not a big fan of Booker on commentary. I love Booker as a wrestler. Like, I think he's, you know, a great coach and things like that, and he does some great stuff with Reality Wrestling. But on commentary, yeah, he's just, I don't know, he's a little bit too much sometimes, a little bit too much. I think he tries to still be Booker T, but without toning it down a little bit, remembering that he's on commentary, needs to tone it down a little bit, unless it's the direction they're giving him. I don't know. But that's at least what I think he should do. I don't know much. I don't know anything about – I saw something about his NXT contract. I don't really know anything about it. If he was replaced, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure trying to do Reality Wrestling and go back and forth to Florida is probably not super easy. And then lastly, I'll kind of make the short with the Heritage Cup. I actually have no problem with the Heritage Cup. But I agree there are way too many titles in WWE as a whole, just not even just NXT, but WWE as a whole. The reason I like the Heritage Cup is it's different. We don't have the 24/7 title anymore. 24/7 title is for as much of a joke as it was. Was that my headset that beeped, or did you something beep on your side?
I was on mute.
Okay. 'Cause I don't know. Something beeped. That was weird. Anyway, for as much of a joke as 24/7 title was, it was different. It wasn't your traditional title. And same thing here for the Heritage Cup. And I hate the fact that I just made that comparison, but here we are. The Heritage Cup, totally, it's a completely different ball game. You have, you know, rounds, and you have breaks in between rounds, and it's three, you know, out of three falls. And, you know, so there's you can tell a story about how, you know, you need to prepare differently for this and you know, and all that. There's a lot of different storytelling devices there. But it's also giving the guys that would normally have something to do with, like, the Cruiserweight title, which is what they were using for the past, you know, handful of years, you know, WWE and NXT towards the end of the title's existence, you know, to kind of give them something to do. And sometimes that you know, that was good TV, and sometimes it wasn't. But now with the Heritage Cup, that's kind of what I feel like they're doing. And they're using the guys that make sense with the Heritage Cup, like Noam Dar, Tyler Bate, Nathan Frazier, to kind of showcase what it is, get the match type over to the U.S. audience. Like myself, you know, before going to NXT Battleground in May, when, you know, I think that was the first Heritage Cup in NXT, I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, these guys, Bruce and Kelly, they didn't fill me in. And I was like, this is great. I love it. Awesome. Let's do it. I want to keep watching them. And even though they're a little predictable because every single one has always gone 2-1, it's fine. They're still fun. And eventually somebody's going to go 2-0. It'll be a big deal. But I'm okay with the Heritage Cup because of how different it is. I'm just hoping that it doesn't become like a joke or a lower kind of mid-card thing as it kind of is right now. I'm hoping that there's a little bit more prestige put on it a little bit, but that's also going to depend on who holds it and how they book it. I've talked for a lot longer about this than I expected, so I'm going to shut up and go Bruce on these last two things, Booker T and the Heritage Cup.
I think regarding Booker T in this specific situation, what makes it more irritating is he's really inconsistent in when he either backs the heel or when he berates the heel for cheating. So I think that plays into it. Another thing with me is that half of Booker T's commentary is him just going, yeah, and you guys are more than that. I guess in WWE you might not have to do more than that, but for commentary, I want a little more than just a repeated one-syllable word over and over again.
Yep.
Another moped.
Hey, no hating on the moped. I was zooming around on mine all day today.
Well, that one wasn't as bad. It wasn't as loud. So it was more of a preemptive a mute there. But regarding the match itself, so again, I'm someone who doesn't have a cable box, and I watch through a network player online, so at USA, when usanetwork.com or something like that. And so when they go to these split screen breaks, I don't get any of them. So for me, I missed the second into the third round, and most of the fifth round as they went to commercials. So for me, kind of hard to really get into the match fully. I did like what I saw, though, of course, because within each round is a different story that's being told. Yeah, a bit predictable. However, I like the Heritage Cup. I do, and, you know, let me just put it this way. Between WWE, AEW, and New Japan, you could cut those titles in half and each promotion will still have too many. So it's a pro wrestling thing. It's not just a WWE thing. It's not just an AEW thing. It's not just a New Japan thing. It's basically a promotional thing. You know, when you have more titles, I guess you can have more matches with more stakes, but it's just a matter of when does it become a diluted product, right? So it's kind of an industry-wide problem right now, so I don't want to place the blame on any one organization because pretty much all the big organizations are guilty of having too many titles. Now, the Heritage Cup is different because it is an actual trophy. They were pouring champagne into it. Kind of reminds me of when a hockey team wins the Stanley Cup and they go around and they use the bowl part of the cup to you know, eat out of, drink out of. So there's a tie-in there that, you know, you're in the Northeast, and you see the Brewers doing a lot in the last 20 years. So that's something that that is relatable to a lot of fans. And the Florida Panthers, did they win one recently? I don't remember. I know they were close, but you have something that is unique, and it's not just another shiny title. It's an actual tangible object that people can see that is different from the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle trophy or any other thing that they've had, like Shane McMahon's Best in the World trophy. This is something a little more polished or dignified, I guess, to a certain extent.
They're going to have to polish it after all the champagne.
Oh, well, yeah. But, yeah, I think it's a little more dignified than those other trophies that we've seen in WWE. And so, for me, it's the only issue I have, again, is that I don't get to see the whole match because of the damn network player. But Noam Dar being the one to have the true championship is an interesting wrinkle, because while Fraser is fun and Fraser could definitely use it, I don't think anything is more associated with anyone right now than the Heritage Cup is with Noam Dar. And he's the person really that's kind of like when Carmelo hit to the North American Championship, Noam Dar is the person kind of making the Heritage Cup something again in NXT. And so I feel like this makes sense. You have, you know, Tyler Bay and Dabba Kato now having some issue that they can move forward with. You also have Fraser possibly being involved there or going after, trying to go back after Dar, but, you know, there's Mensa there and whatnot. Them getting involved and being an integral part of the finish, you knew was going to happen. It's predictable, but again, they basically gave Fraser everything in the match without the win, so I guess that's their way of quote-unquote protecting him. But all in all, a good match, good ending, minus that fifth round, Saved by the Bell botch, but yeah, I think... Oh, and of course, Metaphor's entrance is like the guinea force with four people. It's just really great. So I know the Noam Dar shtick isn't for everybody, and the comedic bits when he was catatonic, I understand. But this is the show where you can try these types of things and see what happens and who excels in what role. And again, I am thoroughly sports entertained by Metaphor.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It's I love that kind of, especially if it's undercard. Like if you try to put that in the main event or something like that, no, I'm not really for it for the most part. Sometimes rare exception, I guess, whatever. But no, I love what they're doing. It's like the catatonic Noam Dar, depressed Dar, as I was calling him. I dig it. I love what they're doing. I'm excited to see how this goes. Like, we had Nathan Frazier promise Tyler Bate a shot of the next shot at the cup. Well, now he can't uphold that promise. So what happens? Because Bate did quite a bit to try and make sure that Frazier held on to that cup. He called in a couple favors, if you will. So that was Bate's reward for those favors. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. I think, maybe like a bit of a friendly feud or something happens between them, or maybe it's not quite friendly, but we'll see. We'll see. Let's continue on. Sean, I do see you in the caller queue. We're going to get to you in just a minute. We're going to finish up the last 2 points from JB's email here first, and then we'll go to you. So the women's title felt a bit forced to me. The language used just came across as unnatural and not how people would actually speak in that scenario. Also, I'm never just a fan of four or five people coming out and giving each other turns to roast one another. That would never happen in reality. I know it's part of WWE's formula, but personally, I could do without it. You know what? So could I. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. We've talked about this a million times on the show in these kind of segments where just, hey, I'm the champion. Hey, you're the champion, and I want a shot at you. Well, you know what? I want a shot at you, too. And then the next thing you know, you've got five people standing there, one being the champion, four people going, hey, I want a shot at the title, and then there's some sort of a multi-person match. Or maybe it's five people or six people or whatever, but it's a multi-person match or something, a tournament, to then determine who's going to face the champion, and that's exactly what we got. I'm fine with it, I guess. I just wish they had a better way of getting us here than going back to this trope time and time again. But whatever. I mean, it kind of sort of makes sense in the context of wrestling. So, like, I give him a pass for using it because it's easy, I guess. If I give them a pass, if the story that they tell from here is worth the shoddy introduction. But yeah, I didn't, you know, the acting and the way everybody's talking to one another, like, definitely wasn't super great. The person that really stood out to me and I think had the most conviction here was Blair Davenport. Roxy actually did a pretty decent job for Roxy when she came out towards the end too. But I think in terms of the person that had the most credibility and believability for me, like, if I was just kind of, you know, again, as a fan, just watching this through my, well, in my case, computer monitor, I look at Blair Davenport and go, okay, out of everybody there, I believe that she is the one that might have the most conviction to win. Now, granted, Roxy comes out and kind of, like, cuts her down a little bit after that. But even so, she was the one that stood out to me there. Curious to see where this, where this goes. Obviously they announced this, a tournament, the second tournament of the night that they've announced. We'll talk about the other one later. sorry, it wasn't a tournament, but a number one contenders type match, Fatal Four Way. I'm assuming they didn't quite say Fatal Four Way. It's not a tournament.
They said Fatal Four Way.
They did say Fatal Four Way. Okay.
They showed the graphics before the main event.
Oh, all right. Towards the end of the show, I was skipping through commercials, so I may have missed the graphic. But at least during the segment with Tiffany Stratton and Mackenzie Mitchell backstage, they didn't quite say Fatal Four Way, and I was like waiting for them to say it, and they didn't. So I wasn't sure what the stipulation was going to be. So cool, thank you. I think that's all I really had to say about that anyway. So let me throw it over to you.
I think last week on the show, I predicted that this very type of segment would happen to establish the number one contender. I'm pretty sure I said Tiffany Stratton's going to give a promo because they announced her, and then she's going to get interrupted by whoever, and it's going to lead to a match. I didn't have the particulars, but that's exactly what happened here. I think the person that stood out to me the most in a negative way was Gigi Dolin. It just seemed like it was way too forced, especially her laughing and trying to make things so comedic, and when she was running down Davenport and whatnot. And I know they really want to try, and I know she has a great story, and I don't, you know, want to see her fail, but I don't think they're in the position she is right now is the right spot. Davenport, definitely. Kiana James, again, she was the person that stood out to me the most in the Iron Survivor Challenge and just kind of petered out there with the whole Fallon Henley, Brooks Jensen little angle thing. So I'm going to be interested again to see how she performs here because she, you know, that was 8 months ago, I think, that match. And that was a long time ago. And I want to see if what happened then was just a one-time thing or she can keep having those type of performances. Because I think if she does, then we'll see her more and more on TV and in more higher-stakes matches. Blair Davenport definitely is the person who I've been saying from the beginning should be women's champion soon. The only issue is that she is definitively a heel. Tiffany Stratton is still firmly also a heel. And like they brought up today, Roxanne Perez basically has a one-up on her. So in that case, Roxanne Perez has the proverbial argument that she should be the next number one contender. And in my opinion, I think that what we're going to see next week is she will win the match because you could pull the fast one and have Gigi Dolin win or Kiana James win. I don't think Dolan's ready for that type of match. I just, you know, her singles matches haven't garnered much confidence in me in that when it comes to this type of a match, this type of a situation at No Mercy, no less, I just am not sure that we'll get what you would expect at basically what is now a takeover type of card. So if you don't have Perez win, Davenport definitely is the other option that makes sense because she's on a little winning streak. Yeah, it's Connie Doran. Yeah, it's Dana Brooke, but she's still on a winning streak. And as you said, she has credibility. You know, I think Roxanne Perez coming in there just, you know, giving a nice forearm shiver to Stratton was nice, and Stratton quickly just sliding out of there and then laughing and smiling at what was going on in the ring. And then telling, you know, basically just laughing it off or not laughing it off. What is it? Just kind of shrugging off the news for next week because she won't have to defend until No Mercy, which going back to Noam Dar, like, oh, I'll have to defend him for 5 weeks. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, that's a nice little touch there from him and the character. Another thing here with Tiffany Stratton. If they don't go Perez or Davenport, then I think they're taking a risk, and I'm not sure if that risk is going to pay off.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to see Gigi Dolan as champion. Sorry, Gigi.
Or, I mean, just in the match, or even, you know, Kiana James, we'll see what happens. But
yeah,
if you're going to go with the heel, you should go with Davenport. If you're going to go with the face, you should probably go with Perez.
Yep. No, 100%. Couldn't agree with you more. Could not agree with you more. All right. And JB's final point question here is, I think this whole Creed Brothers returning NXT after losing a loser leaves town match is poorly done. The Creed's coming back so shortly after losing the match makes them come off a bit heelish in my perspective, or in my view. I know wrestlers returning after losing has happened throughout wrestling history, but I have a hard time remembering when it's happened so quickly and to the same brand. As always, love the show and go VIP. So I know it's happened, and it's happened quick, and I can't exactly – in the past, and I can't exactly think of any off the top of my head. But I know that I have – like, I remember hearing Wade talk about them on podcasts in the past. I remember talking about them myself with either these guys, you guys, or my friends. They just came back really quick. But I don't have any specific examples to back that up. So just we got hearsay there. But this was like, I don't know, we saw this coming a mile away. We've been talking about it on the show for a while now that, you know, just, hey, two of those yellow masked wrestlers following Schism around just so happen to have the same strange body types as the Creed brothers. That's a coincidence. It was just a matter of time before this happened. I kind of expected this to happen before tonight and not actually have the Creed brothers be revealed tonight and have them actually in a match tonight. Or if it didn't happen tonight, then have it happen like later on between, because as Bruce just said, when you said about Noam Dar, we got 5 weeks before No Mercy. So why not have it happen at some point between now and No Mercy and have them make the reveal and then, you know, build to a match at No Mercy. We're still could probably have a match building to No Mercy. We're going to probably have some sort of a meet between the two factions next week, considering since we are talking about the Creed brothers here, they did kidnap somebody on live TV and admit to it and then request a ransom for said kidnapping. So there is that. I love how the law just doesn't apply in like that certain little radius of Florida.
And I was going to say, them coming back so early is the only reason why you find them Tiffy Healers, not the abducting heels, heel to, yeah, okay.
You know, and I mean, you know, it is a play out of Schism's book or Tony D'Angelo's book or Stax's book, or, you know, a lot of people get abducted in NXT now that I think about it, but, you know, as we keep saying, that parking lot's dangerous. Although I guess it didn't happen in the parking lot. Regardless, Creed Brothers now have and Ivy Nile, Diamond Mine reunited. They have Ava. They're holding her hostage for a week, apparently, requesting that the Dyad give them a match for the NXT tag titles. So we're either going to get that match next week or they're going to have something happen and they're going to wind up building that to No Mercy. Throw it over to you, and after Bruce, we'll go to you, Sean. So, Bruce.
Yeah, so, why are faces abducting heels? I just, okay, sure, you can do the whole it's the heels getting a taste of their own medicine, and you can go back to Joe Gacy kidnapping Rick Steiner during his feud with Braun Breaker that I know we all want to forget by now. But
I forgot about it. Thank you for reminding me. Thank you. I needed to remember that.
Oh, I know. That's why I brought it up. But still, it's, I don't know. I just don't think that, aside from them obviously being the ones that were here, and I don't know. It should have. There's really no technicality on why they're able to return like this and it not go against their stipulation. They had to leave on NXT because they're still there. So, yeah, just a lot of parts here that don't fit. And then Schism, Dyad, you know, the steel cage match. They did the whole worry about being locked inside with us, not keeping other people out line, which, okay, cool, but... Dyad hasn't won a big match in a year or something like that, so I don't know if they even won a match in a year, so I can't take anything they threaten too seriously, even though I do love both of them as a tag team, just not in this group. So, yeah, the Creeds are, you know, let me get to this point, because I don't want to forget this because we're talking about them. The match between Ava and Ivy Nile was much better than I anticipated, and Ava, to me, looked better than I thought she would. She had some snap on her body slams. She didn't seem hesitant when she was in the ring, and she got all the offense until a sudden Dragon Slayer and the tap in about 2.5 minutes. So, you know, the last time we saw Ava in the ring, it did not look that good, and she looks much better here to me. Nothing seemed to be a mishap, a botch, timing off. It seemed to be pretty smooth. Now, she wasn't asked to do much, a couple body slams, some corner attacks, things like that, and then tap out. But it's a good sign that with what she was asked to do, it looked fine.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't have much to say about Ivy Nile versus Ava, so I'm going to say it real quick. I agree with you. There's really nothing that you said I don't agree with or that I really have to add. I think for what Ava was asked to do, she went out there and did it well. And I'm going to say it anyway. It doesn't sound like a compliment, but I'm going to say it as a compliment. And it actually also just occurs to me that they're related, so that wasn't even why I was thinking about it. But when she was moving in the ring, I got shades of Nia Jax. And I mean that in a good way. Like the way her presence in the ring, I feel like she's kind of working on her ring presence a bit more. And she is, you know, she's a larger girl. So she's kind of working on presenting herself in that way and moving in that way. And I was watching her and all of a sudden, like, just Nia Jax kind of flickered in my head. And again, I mean that in a good way because I don't often talk about Nia Jax in a good way.
I honestly didn't realize. I forgot how tall how tall Ava was. Honestly.
Yeah.
When I saw her standing around with Nile, I was like, whoa, she really is tall.
Yeah, same. And I mean, Nile's tiny, but like it was really apparent how tall Ava was. But yeah, overall, I really dig what Ava was able to do tonight. I was nervous going into this match. Wasn't sure how she was going to fare. I think this match had a purpose, was to put Ava over, and it served a purpose. With all of that said, Sean, I've said your name a few times now. Let's go over to you. I think you're live now. Sean, how are we doing, man?
And the best part about it is not even Sean.
It's not. My God, it's Brad.
No, it's Brad. How you doing? Hi, guys.
All right. I'm doing good. You know what? That's
all good.
That's hilarious.
So amped up on energy,
yeah,
you don't even read phone numbers, right?
Yep. And you know what? And the thing is, too, is you even hit me up on, yep. All right, I'm an idiot. I'm just an idiot. That's okay. That's fine. Yep.
All good, guys. So great show. I've been listening for the last whatever. I just was curious of what you guys thought of the JC Jane, Thea Hale interaction. Like, I actually thought, like, you know, just having watched the Tiffany Stratton thing, and I love Tiffany, I really do, but, like, it was so unnatural, like, that most of that segment, like, especially Tiffany and then going right to Gigi, as Bruce was saying, like, it just came across as so, like, ugh. And then seeing like Thea in the back and JC James just kind of saying like, hey, like we've all been disappointed. It kind of like came across as really like natural, but also like kind of a strange pairing. I know that they just faced each other at a lot of the NXT lives that go around Florida, JC versus Thea. But this almost seemed like, I thought they were going to just set up some sort of feud between them, but this seemed like a budding friendship or something. Like, what did you guys think of that, and where do you think that leads, if anything? Because obviously, I guess something's going to happen to it with it, right?
A tag team.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking it might be a tag team. Like, because JC, I'm thinking JC's still going to be a heel. She's come across as a heel for quite a while now. She's been a heel for quite a while now. I mean, she kicked her best friend in the face. And so I can't see this being a heel turn or a face turn for her because, like, it kind of seemed like that. But when you think about it, you start thinking about it a bit more, you've got the Hale. She's all pissed off at Chase right now for always, in her own words, knowing best. Chase always knows best, and that's what caused her to lose the last few of her matches. So now she's all, you know, she's mad. JC Jane walks up to her, kind of feeds into that. Hey, here's some advice. Here's what's helped me. Embrace it. And I think we're going to see I think we've seen the last of that crazy, energetic cheerleader, Thea Hale. And we're about to see a new incarnation. We're going to see a heel turn for Thea Hale. I think she's going to turn on Chase University. And yeah, I think she's going to team with JC Jane. I'm curious to see if she keeps up with that same type of energy and enthusiasm and how she molds it to becoming a heel, or if she just gets rid of it entirely. And in a way, I think it'd go either way for her. If she gets rid of it entirely, it's kind of like Chris Jericho. Like I remember him talking about whatever the heels like, or whatever the fans like about you as a face, throw it away, get rid of it. Don't do it. And actually, more than just Chris Jericho talking about that, but he's the one that I remember talking about off the top of my head. If she does that, great, it's going to create heat because that's what people want to see. But at the same time, it's what makes her unique. So I'm hoping she's still able to harness that energy in a heel way to still stand out and be unique, especially while she develops her in-ring skills some more. I hope that all makes sense. But that's kind of where I am on that, and I think it is going to be a tag team. Bruce, let me throw it over to you.
You know what a heel team? You know what a heel turn means, right, Nate?
She's going to start wearing all black.
All black. Hey, here it comes. All black. Yep. So, the thing too here is Thea Hale was acting like a petulant child, like, you know, only the spoiled kids. The petulant kids, the ones who don't like hearing no, go up to someone and ask them to reverse a decision and say it's someone else's fault. She was sitting there saying, it was Mr. Chase's fault that I lost. Can you reverse a decision, blah, blah, blah. And she was all pouty about it and, you know, begging the ref for that. And, you know, then she leaves the ref and she's pouting and blaming him some more. So I think they're trying to indicate that heel turn is coming because she was seriously considering what JC Jane said. It wasn't just exactly what Jason Jay said, but she also made sure to say, you know, people like us trying to include Thea Hale in her, you know, trying to make Thea Hale feel included with her, whereas right now she kind of feels like an outcast in Chase U because of Andre Chase. With JC Jane, right, I think there was also a subtle dig at the Mandy Rose situation because she said, we've all been let down by someone here. And it could be Gigi Dolan too, but she was the one to turn on Gigi Dolan, so I'm not sure if that's play it that way. It might be the whole thing with Mandy Rose being released and all that. So beyond that, we keep saying that JC Jane is better in a tag team. That's no insult. Some people are just tag team wrestlers. She did look better in her